Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Barrick and all the kids in the PC. Really? Already? It's Saturday. What the heck is it? The 8th day of August, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to the entirely unprepared sound bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm not hearing anything through my... Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, fix it so there's no echo, so we don't hear anything.
Right, now, I'm hearing it now. 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things, news, and nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Have you paid your dues? Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. In case you hadn't heard and missed the email that Google allegedly sent out to all users, Google Assistant is giving way to Google Gemini. Starting to roll out on September 4th, Assistant will be discontinued and you will be forcefully moved instead to Gemini. This applies not only to phones, but also to Wear OS watches, headphones, and I quote, vehicles running Android Auto projected from a user's mobile device. This announcement does not apply to other form factors yet, though Google mentioned that Gemini is coming to Google TV devices and Google Home speakers and smart displays. It remains to be seen when the docked Pixel tablet will get Gemini. Oh, and according to Google, once availability is removed, you will no longer be able to switch to use or switch back to Google Assistant. The thing you need to know is that Gemini cannot at this time perform all the functions that Assistant can. Gemini supports calls, messages, routines, navigation, and many device controls, but some services and actions remain unavailable or work differently. Google still does not support some podcast, news, and radio stations, third-party music providers, or interpreter mode. Google's advice for those is to switch back to Assistant, but of course, Google also says you can't switch back to Assistant, so make of that what you will. Reliability can carry added consequences for people who depend on voice controls for accessibility. There are numerous reports of Gemini mishandling timers, reminders, navigation, calls, and smart home controls. That is to say, all the things that Gemini can do. Sometimes Gemini says the tasks are completed when they have not been, and vice versa. Assistant worked well for narrow instructions because it did not need to interpret much beyond the user's command. Adding generative capabilities creates a risk that the system will overcomplicate requests that previously produced a consistent action. The shutdown notice does not explain whether making Gemini Android's only Google Assistant will change how users' voice interactions are collected, retained, reviewed by users, or humans rather, or used to improve Google AI models. When Google announced the transition last year, it said Assistant would remain unchanged on phones that did not meet Gemini's minimum system requirements. The new notice says users will receive Gemini when it is available and their device is eligible, but does not explain what happens to unsupported phones once Assistant access is removed. Apparently, this does not yet apply to Google Home speakers, smart displays, or Google TV devices. Google is separately replacing Assistant on speakers and smart displays through Gemini for Home. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google Assistant goes away on September 4th. And your choices are, I never use it anyway, Gemini should work just fine, just another dead Google project, I am tempted to say bad words, and Google. So far, we've got 24 votes, and I never use it anyway, is half of them. And of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And once you've done that, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415.
Like we were talking about, you know, off air there before the show, is I am just getting so tired of the other stuff that they're adding into this Windows that's broken because they put it out there for us to beta test it. We're the beta testers.
Right.
And it's messing up machines. I had to back off because it did some weird stuff. It wanted to add my phone. Wanted to add my phone. It's just that, even though I don't want to give out my phone number.
Right.
And it's like you, we've said before, it's not our system. We lease it.
That's exactly right. And Google is making changes. Look, we're in the middle of an AI craze right now. Everybody wants AI. You've got to have AI. If it doesn't have AI, your investors are going to be unhappy. And let us remember, any publicly traded company, the only important people are the investors. So the investors want more AI. The investors get more AI.
Mm-hmm.
And the heck with you.
Even though it's dumber than a sack of bricks.
That's exactly right. Dave was kind enough to lend me his old Pixel phone, and I will be putting graphene on that one of these days.
Oh, okay, okay.
And a Graphene OS, which is a Android-like product that has nothing to do with Google. You can run the Google Play Store, so you can run, you know, all the Google apps or all the apps that are in the Play Store, but they all run in a sandbox. And so they don't know the important information about your phone, like the IMEI number or your SIM number, any of that stuff. So you keep as private as you can be. And of course, you can decide not to load a lot of that stuff and just not have any of it if you don't want it.
Well, I'm glad you could find a good use to it because, like, it was going to sit in a drawer because when I was looking at...
I don't want a phone that's sitting in your drawers.
Me neither. So that's why they were going to give me a whole $17. $17 to turn the phone in. And it's like, yeah, no.
You're right. Uh-uh.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of there are a lot of alternatives to the various to Windows and Android and Mac OS and iOS. There's Graphene OS and there's another one, Lineage OS for phones. And of course, there's many versions of Linux available to people. Anybody who does not want to be a product for somebody else's investors, those are the ways to go right now.
Well, like I told you, me being retired now seems to be very dangerous. I'm getting Nick syndrome.
You are.
I'm buying stuff on the internet, and I've got all this time to play around with stuff. And key point being, this past few days, I set up at one of my old computers and put Zorin in it. Now, Nick's been playing with it, and I've heard him mention it before. That's why I was like, oh, what the heck? I'll give it a shot. For any of you folks that sit there, oh, I'm afraid to try it. You got an old laptop. Zorin is so easy to set up. You literally just download a small program called Rufus. Rufus will then burn the image of Zorin 18 onto your
thumb drive.
You pop it in, hit the delete key to say bring up your boot menu, hit it, load it from there, install it, and you would swear you still had Windows. Because you can pick whether it looks like Windows 10, Windows 7, or Windows 11. You icon is down in the lower left-hand corner. You click on there. There's your menus. And it also has all the features of Linux, too, that it's got the repository as far as software. But a lot of regular software will run on it anyways.
So, right. Well, what I really like about Zorin, I have to say, is when you go to install a program, you could, if you want, install Microsoft Office.
Yep.
When you do that, you get a pop-up. It says, look, there's three ways you can install this.
Mm. Yep.
You can install it as a web app, but you have to be connected to the web to use it.
Yeah.
You can install the actual Microsoft Office, and I'll put Wine on it and all of that stuff, and it'll run fine. Or you can give LibreOffice a try. And LibreOffice does all the same stuff.
And that's already pre-installed.
And you get to pick which one you want.
Yeah.
And I think that's really kind of lovely.
Yeah. Well, even as far as other install packages, you know, they got the Snap Packs and the Debian and, you know, different ways that if you're comfortable with other operators installing, you can get to pick from the install menu.
Right.
On the different apps that you're going to install. You know, it might say, okay, Firefox. Well, we've got three different flavors here. Which way do you want to install it?
Right.
And it'll do it for you.
The other thing you were talking about changing your desktop, for if you get Zorin Pro, which is, I think, $48, if you get Pro, you get 12 different desktop layouts. So you get Mac, Windows, Windows Classic, Chrome OS, Compact, Ubuntu, Elementary, and Cinnamon. So you get...
try one of each.
And you can switch back and forth. And then there's the four that you normally get are Windows, the Windows-like one, the touch one. So if you've got it on a touch screen device, you can use that. The Windows list-like, which is, I think, more like Windows 8 or whatever. And then the GNOME shell. So there's just a lot of capability in Zorin, and it's a pretty nice operating system. You don't have to pay money for it. You can use the free version without a problem, and that makes lots of sense because you know you get all the normal things that you would normally want to have. So if you're looking at a version of Linux, take a look at Zorin OS. In the meantime, we're going to talk to Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Good afternoon, guys. I had Zorin on one of my seven Linux computers. Last week, I did an upgrade, and when I went to restart, I got a red page that said kernel panic.
Huh.
I was lost. I couldn't figure out how to get into it. I did internet searches. It said to go to your BIOS and start from the grub menu and choose a previous kernel, but I couldn't find that in my BIOS. Johnny, you got ideas?
Yes. So here's the thing. This happens with every operating system every once in a while. It's a bad system update, an incompatible driver. Things happen.
Something went wrong somewhere.
Went wrong. The way you can fix it is restart your PC, and it depends on the PC you have. It's either holding the shift or the escape will open the grub menu, the boot menu. And what you can find is grub keeps at least two versions of Linux running at all times, available at all times. The newest version that you're currently running, and then one back. So let's say you're on Zorin 18.4. I'm just making up these numbers. When you boot the PC holding either the shift or the escape, and again, it depends on what machine you have, you will see the grub menu, and you'll see Zorin 18.4, and you'll also see Zorin 18.3. Arrow down to that one, hit enter, and now you are running the old kernel, which you know booted properly, and you can once again do an apt update and apt upgrade stuff.
One of the other programs that I discovered is called Time Shift.
If you do that upgrade, won't you go right back into the kernel panic?
It depends on why there was a kernel panic. If, for example, there was a glitch in the download of one of the files for the operating system, redoing it means you probably won't get that glitch again. But that's the place to start.
I guess what I missed was how to get into the grub menu. My instructions I found said to go into the BIOS, and you're telling me just to hold down one of the two keys.
Wait, well, it depends on the machine you have. It's generally either shift or escape. And what that does is it tells Zora, it tells any OS, any Linux OS, instead of booting the latest version that you're running, go to the grub menu so that they can pick one.
And it's after the BIOS loads, but before the OS loads.
Yeah. Right.
Like I say, another...
Yeah, well, I've already put a new distro on.
Oh, there you go.
But I'll remember that for the next time. You guys got the best information. I really thank you for all the time that you put in for us over the years.
Hey, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Quickly, just another program that I discovered that I put on Zorin was called Time Shift. And Time Shift...
Yeah, did you ever try to reboot from Time Shift?
No, I haven't yet. I'm just getting into... Like I was telling Nick...
What you've got to do is you've got to put in your original ISO.
Yeah.
And then go into that ISO, download Time Shift, and then look for our previous version of Time Shift. Unfortunately, I hadn't added Time Shift to this one.
Ah, okay. Because, like I say, I just, being retired now, all of a sudden I discovered I had all this extra time, and it was raining out, and I thought, okay, I'll dig up this old computer, and I just started getting into Zorin, and that's why I was talking about it at the beginning of the show, is because it's so easy and user-friendly for folks that want to move from Windows to Linux product and get away from all that bloatware and everything else that Windows keeps mucking up your machine. I'm tired after all these decades of being a beta tester for Windows and Microsoft. I've had it. I'm fed up with it.
Also, as a point of interest for Nick, PISOS has been updated. They didn't have a maintainer for a long time.
And, right.
Pandora changed one of their APs and you couldn't use it. But somebody decided to update and now you can use PISOS again. And somebody made an app called Rico, R-E-C-O.
Mm-hmm.
That was originally made for another Linux distribution, but it's been ported as a Flatpak. And Rico will record any streaming media. Mm. So you can record your PISOS.
Oh, very nice. For those of you who don't know, PISOS... or Pythos, I don't honestly know how it's pronounced. is a program that lets you run Pandora from your desktop. Famously, the Pythos was the container from the myth of Pandora that actually contained. It wasn't a box. Pandora's box. It was Pandora's Pythos. That contained all the stuff. So, Pythos. I use Pythos all the time. I run it's running on one of my machines and the speakers, and I'm listening to Pandora quite regularly. It's a great program, and I'm glad to know it's getting updated. I'll have to check for the update. Thanks.
And what's real special for people is when you run it through Pythos, you don't get any commercials.
Right. Right. Okay, thanks, Bill.
Thank you, guys.
That's great. Yeah, there are a lot of really nice little utility sound utility, radio type utility. There's one called Sound Shortwave. And what Shortwave does is has a list of like 15,000 internet radio stations.
Jeez.
Including, believe it or not, Jazz 90.1. And so I do sometimes play shortwave, sometimes I play Pythos. And you can listen to whatever you like all day long for free. You know, you're not paying for anything, and then using something like Rico, Rico or however it's pronounced. You can record whatever you want to record. So
I was Googling Pythos Rico to put the link up for it, but I spelled it with a Y because I figured Python.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Ran across an article a Toronto judge has ruled that pythons are not mental service animals, and you can't take them on airplanes.
What?
Somebody tried to.
Unbelievable.
The python's name was Rico.
That does not surprise me. People will do the, like, Art Linkletter, before a lot of folks' time, used to say, kids would say, people will do and say the dumbest things. And it's true to this day. Yep. I mean, that was over 50 years ago. 60 years ago, I remember that.
Yep.
I want to hope it was named after Rico from Starship Troopers.
Sure, Johnny Rico.
Johnny Rico, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a lot of things. I personally use MPlayer to record this show every week because it's command line and I can just set it up and then Crontab records it every week. But there's lots of programs that do that, lots of programs that play music. Audacity, of course, is a well-known program. There's all kinds of music players in Linux. And like I said, shortwave for radio stations. Quite amazing. Quite an amazing little product.
One thing I'm going to say just before, you know, kill the subject as far as Zorin. Like you were saying, there is three different flavors. There's just the basic, which I would recommend folks doing. Unless you want the educational one. Again, those two are free. And then the pro has a lot of other features, like Nick and Steve were talking about, as far as video editing and other graphics programs and everything else. So they, and it's only, what did you say, Nick? It was like $47?
$48. $47.99 or something like
that. $48. And it's a one-time deal. And then you're good in... You know, they even have it in the program that you can have it checked for updates. So it'll, like Linux, will let you know, and it does it in the background as far as updating.
Right.
I mean, I just can't wait to get off of Windows on all my machines if I can.
I've got one, that little tiny Fujitsu stylistic 2-in-1 tablet. Still running Windows 11. It's very slow, but I only use it really to make screenshots for my newsletter. And other than that, I run Linux on everything. And I've got, like I said, I have a laptop that I'm running Zorin on as well, and I like it very much.
Well, like I told you, the one computer upstairs, I still have Windows on, and my wife's computer. And the only reason... Even my window computer upstairs for the ham radio is because I'm still waiting, and I think it's going to be before the end of the year. They're coming out with this one software package that I use. They're coming out with a Linux version, finally, and also Mac. He finally found out gentleman, Mike, has discovered that, you know, there's a big community of Mac folks out there, too, with the tablets and everything else that the software will run on. And they're finally got the new version out, but they're only for PCs right now and Windows, which is a bummer. But they're claiming by the end of the year or the beginning of the first of the year, it's going to be Linux based also along with Mac. And then there will not be a Windows computer in my house at all.
Well, we keep hearing about all the telemetry that Microsoft is doing, that they're taking all the information from your machine. We talked last week or the week before about the GDID, the Global Something Identifier, Global Device Identifier. I was thinking GD stood for something else, but it doesn't. It's Global Device Identifier. And... It is a, for those of you who weren't listening last week or the week before, and why weren't you? Well, 2 weeks ago we weren't here, so 3 weeks ago. You know what? We'll talk about that when we come back. Right now we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. What is a clock? I'm apparently not paying any attention today. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Do not go too far.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The only way I can see that your head is bouncing up.
Well, there's another YouTube strike. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Steve Wright. And it's Spotify lately, not YouTube.
Really?
Yeah.
Spotify?
I got 7 strike notices yesterday.
Wow.
And they
took a week?
Apparently.
Cheese and crackers. All right. It's 36 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbite. Here's your Microsoft news. Windows 11. Okay. Speaking of spying on you. Windows 11 quietly runs a background service called Windows Health and Optimization Experiences. And yes, it starts automatically on every boot. It's real. It's been there for over a year. But no, it isn't secretly recording your PC and sending it to Microsoft every 15 minutes. They have other programs that do that. What this does is actually far less dramatic. The service, known internally as WHESVC, watches for signs of a sluggish system and only saves diagnostic traces locally on your own machine. The data it collects don't leave your PC unless you choose to file a report through Feedback Hub. Look, we get it. Nobody trusts Microsoft. Nobody should trust Microsoft. But to be fair, this isn't something nefarious. In fact, it's a good thing. Copilot already lives inside new Outlook for Windows, and even speaking of things that grab all your data, Copilot already lives inside new Outlook for Windows and even mobile apps, including Android and iOS. On mobile, you have the Copilot button next to the Compose button. On Windows, Copilot lives inside the left sidebar and has a button in the ribbon menu. Now it's coming directly to the inbox via a new Wrap Up Your Day feature. It opens Copilot in the right sidebar with a prompt that instructs Outlook to create an executive and concise evening inbox brief for emails in the inbox, focused and other, and sent from the last 8 hours only, and organizes the answers around what you accomplished today, the top 3 things to focus on based on urgency Copilot detected across your inboxes, and the top 3 priorities for tomorrow. In other words, it micromanages you because you don't have enough Copilot in your life, citizen. And this is actually kind of nice, or it would be if Copilot actually asked for permission before reading my inbox, sent mail, and other folders. And it seems you can't turn it off. Look, we get it. Nobody trusts Microsoft. Nor should they, apparently. This is my favorite. Microsoft has quietly wiped every trace of its own 32-gigabyte RAM recommendations from the Windows Learning Center. That's right. Microsoft is recommending 32 gigs of RAM to run Windows 11. Let me repeat that for those of you who are in the back row. Microsoft was recommending 32 gigs of RAM to run Windows 11.
Like you said, the price of poker keeps going up.
And they've now erased that completely, all the while adding new 8 gig RAM Surface devices to battle the crazy memory prices and, oh, by the way, the MacBook Neo. RAM prices have gone up sharply this year. PC shipments just posted their first year-over-year decline in 9 quarters. And Windows 10, a decade-old OS that still needs far less memory than Windows 11, won't stay dead thanks to extended security support. It hasn't been good news for Microsoft on any front, so Microsoft has now changed their Windows recommendation from 32 gig down to just 8 gig. Oh, and in a totally unrelated coincidence, Microsoft's new Surface devices come with just 8 gig of RAM, you know, like the MacBook Neo. If you only do one or two things at a time on your computers, Windows 11 with 8 gig is okay. But open a few browser tabs or 743, mm-hmm. like Dave does, or run more than a couple of programs at once, and suddenly you're spending all your time waiting for Windows to swap stuff in and out from disk. Hope you've got a lot of time and patience. We do, sort of. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415, just like Matt did from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Nick, how's it going? How are you gentlemen down at the station?
We're good. How are you?
All right. Speaking of the Neo, I picked up one for my mom, kind of like as a Mother's Day birthday present thing.
Nice.
And she absolutely loves it.
Good.
You know, it's almost like an investment. I bought it for $5.99, and they shot up $100 already.
Yeah, exactly. Good for you. And she likes it a lot, huh?
Well, she never really was an Apple person. She's not in that ecosystem, I guess you would say. But she's learning. And she goes, oh, I got AI on it. So she thinks it could do everything.
Sure,
so,
sure.
You know,
well, the Neo is a very nice and very capable little machine.
I was never one to buy Apple products. But when I seen that price on that, I just had to get it for her, you know, because she doesn't know too much about computers.
You and a whole lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of sense. It's a very capable machine, and at that price point, it's not a bad machine at all.
Yeah.
It's not a high-end machine. Again, there, you know, you run too many things at once or try to play high-end games or do high-end video editing or whatever on it. It's not the machine for you. But for the everyday user who does two or three things.
Basically designed as a first computer
for
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. It's a very nice machine.
And technically,
I like
I'm only running two.
On it. I picked her up to lime green. But no, the real reason I called in is I just want to say, once in a while, man, if you guys have problems with your internet provider, it pays to call in and complain. I have Verizon home internet here. We had a fiber outage for I think it was 3 to 5 days. I called up and complained. I'm paying $35. I had 350 upload download speeds. Believe it or not, I called and complained. They go, you guys are Verizon. Why isn't this getting fixed? Oh, whatever. They upgraded me to 1 gigabyte speed for $35 a month for a whole year, and they sent me a $100 gift card.
Nice. Very, very nice. Good for you.
That one.
Yeah.
Good for you. You win, man.
Squeaky wheel gets it done.
Good, good, good.
And also, another thing was, I called the cable company recently just because I watch local TV, right? And believe it or not, the price of basic cable now is $90. So I said, you know, forget all this. I'm going old school. I hit eBay. I bought an outdoor antenna. I'm going with a digital analog converter, and now my next mission is to find a CRT TV.
Yep.
Just to get local channels. I mean, $90 for cable, that's ridiculous.
Well, one of the sneaky things they do is basic cable is not the lowest tier. Basic cable gives you the 200 channels.
Mm-hmm.
You want starter cable. That gives you basically you know, 8 through 13.
Well, from what I talked to, the guy on the phone from Spectrum said the cheapest package they have available is $90.
So maybe they discontinued that.
Yeah, like I say, you can just get the antenna that sits up in the window. They're small, slim units.
No, I bought the outdoor antenna on eBay. I'm going to put it on a little 10-foot pole out on my patio.
Mm-hmm.
And
run your cable up.
I got, you know, good coax and everything.
Good for you.
One other thing you want to do, though, just as a word of caution, since you got that out there, and it's electrical, is also get yourself, say, at least a four-foot piece of copper to stike.
I forgot about that. The grounding cable and a copper rod, right?
Yeah, just ground it with some, copper wiring. And take it down to a ground rod because you've got that sitting up there, and that's like a lightning storm in that you'd rather have it go on down into the ground than coming on into your house and blowing up the TV.
You know, I didn't even think of that. It's no wonder why I call you guys. You're always giving out good advice. Hey, guys, I appreciate it, and you have a good, nice rest of your weekend.
You too.
Thanks, Matt. Bye-bye.
All right. Take it easy.
Yep. Yeah, there's at the $90 level, that's actually more than YouTube TV, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's been creeping up, too. I think it's up to 85 now.
It's but still less than 90.
The great thing about that I love and why I picked YouTube TV is you can record an unlimited number of channels at the exact same time.
And so, you do.
Between me and my wife, there's like 20 shows a day.
It
only lasts for nine. The recording only lasts for 9 months, which usually isn't a problem because when a repeat airs, the 9 month clock starts again.
Right. I record a lot of things off TCM, Turner Classic Movies.
Yep.
And they repeat at least once a year. So I've got a bunch of movies saved for that I watch all the time.
And Shirley's still catching up on her Christmas movies. And then the Christmas in July movies started.
Right. there's a great, for $85 or whatever it is. How come they don't give me the price?
I see they have one called TV Stream for only $40 a month. And it's not as many channels, but it may be the ones you want.
Right. Yeah, so you really want to look at, is that where I want to be? Oh, yeah, here we go. These are the various choices that you can make. And, of course, you can always add things. I'm not a big sports guy, so I don't need all the sports stuff, but there's lots and lots of choices.
Well, the one thing the Spectrum is also offering is they're saying $100 of other streaming services like HBO Max and Disney Plus and Hulu Plus.
See, that's why I like
my Sling. Included in your $90 Spectrum bill. Yeah, what is this? Bless you.
Thank you.
What is Sling TV up to?
Yeah, Sling, I think for that, with the extra package, I'm only paying. Was it $75? Yeah, $75 with the plus package, because my wife likes the Hallmark and all those things and that, and it gives me some extra stuff. But and it also includes 50 gigabytes of free video DVD storage. So my wife stores, likes to record certain programs, and we can just go in there and. So far, for the past 4 years, she's been watching these programs when she's wanting to just delete it and keep the 50 gig open.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. This is a question about old spinning hard drives. Is it safe to use a hard drive that has been dormant and good storage for maybe 5-6 years, or do they deteriorate even with a shelf life?
Well, every drive deteriorates.
Yeah, it depends.
So, but it's certainly, generally speaking, if it hasn't been abused and it's been kept in you haven't kept it in the trunk of your car so it freezes in the winter and
Don, please,
in the summer.
Hold on a minute. You've got your radio on. Could you please turn it down? Because we're hearing it back in the background.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you. I've got my radio turned down, but I'm not hearing you on the phone.
Really?
We are. We're hearing your radio playback into the phone.
Yeah.
Very odd.
Very odd.
At any rate, it shouldn't be a problem, but I wouldn't use it as my only drive.
Yeah. The other issue is called stiction. The lubricating grease on the spindle of the spinny drive can dry out and then cause it not to spin properly.
Right. That's why I was saying if you've kept it in a climate controlled area, like in a closet in your bedroom, then it shouldn't be a problem. I've got some drives that are 15 years old.
Yeah. I just pulled one out that I've had for about 3 or 4 years, but it's been sitting in, it's not sitting in some hot climate or that. It was down the basement where it's cool. I pulled it up and it was a 750 gig hard drive, and it's working fine.
And I've been using mine as backups and not my only backup. So if it dies, okay, it dies, but you know, it's not a disaster. It's just another backup. So depending on what you're doing and how you're doing it and how that drive was stored, it should be okay to use, not obviously not as good as a new drive. But every drive dies eventually, every drive. So, you know, you want backups no matter what you're doing.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
What I would like to do is use a couple of these old drives for backup and test them first with a program like Victoria. And if they test good, could I safely use them for several years more?
It depends.
Only for backup?
You can use them until they die.
Yeah.
And nobody can predict when that will be.
Although average seems to be 5 years, 20% failure rate per year of use.
But that's 5 years of use.
Yeah.
Like I said, I had one that was stored in a closet for about 10 years, and I've been using it for about, well, three now anyway. So, you know, it's 13, 14 years in.
It's like the old adage of when will a light bulb burn out?
Right.
When you turn it on and it doesn't.
Do you get any kind of a warning that the drive is starting to go out?
Yeah, sometimes, when it doesn't boot.
Well,
sometimes it'll make a weird noise.
It'll make a weird noise, or you'll get an error when you try to save something. You know, if that happens once, it could be a glitch.
Or
you hear two or three times, it's time to get another backup.
So it's that customer that brings the drive in. Yeah, it's been making a weird noise for 6 months.
Yeah, or when you're booting it up, if you hear any kind of click, 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 that's usually the drive is starting to have issues because it's not finding a boot sector or a boot menu or whatever.
But sometimes it just dies with no warning.
Again, it depends.
So as a backup, yes. As your only backup,
no.
And as your only drive, absolutely not.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
Don. Thank
you very much. Bye-bye. Yeah, the magic of drives. We've talked about this before. Google and 100 other companies have done extensive, have used billions of drives over the years, and it doesn't matter if it's a spinning drive or an SSD or whatever, the average lifespan is 5 years. Now, remember, there's lies, damned lies, and statistics. An average of 5 years means some drives will last 10 years with no problem at all. Some will die out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Most will be somewhere in the middle. So, you know, that's like the old saying, okay, you know how smart the average person is? By definition, half of them are dumber than that. So it's just that statistic. So the deal is use any drive you want, but be aware that it can die at any time. And that's true of the drive in your computer. It's true of the drive in your NAS, your network attached storage. It's true of the thumb drive you've been carrying around for 6 years.
It's true of your backup drive. The odds of your main drive and your backup drive dying at the same time are low, but not zero.
Never zero.
Never zero. So you have a second backup, third backup. You never get to zero, but the odds get lower and lower every time you add a backup drive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the more backups you have, the better. The more often you back up, the better. And the more different. Look, we've got a page on our website. You can go to soundbites.org. And one of the important links is the second one, as a matter of fact, is backup, backup, backup. You don't have enough. And it will take you to one of my pages at asknick.com. That's asknick.com.
Where you can
follow the 3-2-1 backup plan. Three separate backups in two separate places, at least one of which is off site, and preferably in the cloud so you can retrieve it from anywhere. And there are lots of programs that will do that. Many of them are listed on that site. And so you know, having multiple backups, one of the things that I recommend people do regularly is when you take a computer out of service, the screen dies, the keyboard's broken, whatever, whatever. If you can take the drive out of it, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then put it in some sort of container, stick it on a Raspberry Pi or another machine or in a container and stick it on a USB port or on a right directly to the network somehow and use it as a backup drive. Yep. Again, it's not going to be a new drive, but the more backups you have, the less likely it will be that you lose everything. Nothing breaks all of our hearts more. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I had all these pictures of my grandparents and they're gone now, and now the drive is dead.
We had a customer bring in a Lenovo this week that won't boot up. And, oh, I've got my backup drive. So we look at it 18 months ago.
Yep.
Was the last backup.
Yep.
One thing I noticed that Google all of a sudden started doing was, you know, how you get your spare drive, the Google Drive.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, with the one account I set up, it was automatically doing a backup to the drive off my desktop.
Do you have Google Photos on your desktop?
Or Google Drive for desktop.
Or Google Drive for desktop. Desktop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it all of a sudden started turning on the syncing, and then all of a sudden I get this warning, hey, the space is full. Yep. No, I don't want it backing up there. I got to go into three other different Raspberry Pis. I don't need you to do no stinking
both
back up there. So yeah. I had to go in there and turn it off because they turned it on, thinking they know better than
Apple,
I want to do.
All of them, Apple, Google, Microsoft, they're all quick to turn on their cloud backup service. And the conspiracists among us say that so they can charge you more for space.
Yeah.
So it's good to have cloud space. But there are free ways to do it. There are less expensive ways to do it than
like I said, I've got three Raspberry Pis that sit down in the basement that I back up to for both my stuff and my wife's stuff. And I don't, you know, as far as the Google Drives, I like having those because no matter where I am, I can get to it and just have files there that I want to share between my three computers. And I like you say, the photos and everything else, they're all stored, and the documents are stored on three different Raspberry Pis, which are fine for me. I don't need your stinking backup. And then charge me more. It ain't happening.
No, and I get that. I do. But, you know, it's for people who don't do that, right, who don't have those extra backups, having something that does back you up is not a bad thing. Assuming it all fits in that 15 gig.
Well, what's that software that you use for the backup?
pCloud.
pCloud.
And you can see a link to that. Full disclosure, I get a couple of bucks if you... couple of bucks. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, really.
I get a few pennies if you buy from my affiliate link. But pCloud is an automatic backup thing, and you can set which directories back up and et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of my cloud backups, and it's been great for me. In fact, I just recently I had it on my wife's machine, so I've got a definite backup of her stuff, and I just made four other backups of her stuff. So those things are important to have. Make sure you've got backups of everything. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is history. But do not despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole other hour of Dave Enright. A whole other hour of Steve Ray. A whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole other hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Those phone numbers mean you must be listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be sound bites right here on the truly great member supported. Hey, member supported. That means you could go to jazz901.org and make a donation. You could do that right now if you want to. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Well, it's the start of a new month, which means Google is once again rolling out a fresh security patch for most compatible Pixel phones.
What you mean?
Most?
Most. The August 2026 update is light on changes, with the most notable fix addressing GPU performance issues on the Pixel 10 family. Google's official release notes for the August 2026 update mention only three fixes, all of which are related to the Pixel 10 series. This includes addressing an annoying touchscreen bug that caused it to act all wonky. The August patch is only available for Pixel 8 and newer devices. It is, although I got an update on my 7. Okay. It is not rolling out for the Pixel 7 and Pixel 6 series. Google says the rollout will continue over the next week in phases, so it may not immediately show up on your phone for download. What seems like a deliberately vague comment by outgoing Apple CEO Cook, during the Goldman Sachs earnings call suggests that heavy Siri AI usage could be more expensive than we've so far expected. While it has always seemed clear that you wouldn't be able to make unlimited use of Siri AI without paying for it in some way, Cook's remarks do appear to point to some bad news. Apple aims to do as much AI processing as possible on device, which has the twin benefits of maximizing user privacy while allowing Apple to avoid AI server costs on those tasks. However, there will be tests that need to be run on Apple's own private cloud compute servers, and yet others that will require the use of Google Gemini servers. That server usage, of course, costs Apple money. Cook said they're eyeing, and I quote, upgrade possibilities on iCloud Plus, end quote, which sounds to me like an add-on subscription cost to the current cost of iCloud Plus. In other words, the subscription doesn't automatically give you higher usage limits, only access to the ability to purchase an add-on to bump up those limits. Of course, the language is perfectly vague, so read into it what you will. Gemini on Wear OS is getting a new overlay design that takes after neutral expression on Android phones to boost cross-device consistency. Previously, activating Gemini on Wear OS would open the full app. This new overlay appears over your current watch face, similar to Android phones and tablets. It's a small change, but we know how much people love change, so be ready for it. Dave can tell you all about how much he loves change because he's staring right at it. Apple released updates for three of its macOS platforms on Thursday. The newest versions are macOS Tahoe 26.6.1, macOS Sequoia 15.7.9, and macOS Sonoma 14.8.9. When you update a device, the message is simply this update provides security updates for your Mac. On its support pages, Apple has specified that these changes address a vulnerability in screen sharing. If you're running a Mac, it's probably worth getting this new OS downloaded quickly. Google is launching the Pixel 11 line at 6 p.m. Eastern with Trevor Noah hosting. You can watch it on YouTube. And Google has an important notice up on, oh yeah, this is what we were just talking about, on its Google Drive support page, sharing that the desktop app will no longer offer support for Google Photos backups after August 10th of 2026. Now, you might be confused about this, because Google Drive and Google Photos will both still continue to operate after this date. It's a small detail, but Google Drive for desktop has the option to automatically back up folders with photos directly to Google Photos. This does not affect the Photos app on your phone, only on your desktop. It also doesn't affect your ability to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415.
Too many Google products named Google. Too many Microsoft products named Copilot.
Yeah, exactly. They don't pay anybody to make up names. Unlike every drug manufacturer who actually pays people to find names that aren't already trademarked. That's why you have Krumfurfish and Papa Noogie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Al from Victor, New York. What's up, Al?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Last week, Nick, you mentioned NPass, and I'd never heard of it. Right now, I'm using Apple's passwords, and a lot of the features for both of them sound pretty similar. Are they somewhat near equivalent to each other in terms of protection?
Well, sort of. The Apple's keychain, which they renamed Passwords, apparently keychain was too...
Don't say it was too generic, because so is Passwords.
Yes. only runs on Apple devices. I should see if it runs in iCloud for Windows. But NPass runs on Apple and Microsoft and Linux and iOS and every device.
So Android, everything.
Android, yeah. So if you have a cross-platform family, then that can help that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't use cross-platforms. We're 100% Apple.
Then if all your devices are Apple devices... Now, and I'm assuming Password also works with iOS.
Yep.
So if all your devices are Apple devices, you don't need NPass.
Okay. That's quite a relief. I was thinking of the horrors of actually switching over to a different password system.
Right. Well, generally speaking, you can export and import, so it doesn't... It's like two
operations. Make it as horrific as it sounds.
But yeah, generally speaking, you don't need to worry about it. For people who are not in the Apple ecosystem, for example, I use, I have a Windows machine, but I use Linux and Android all the time. So NPass gives me fully encrypted, shared password database among all my devices. Once I install it, I get all my passwords. I've given it to my daughter, so she has all my passwords. And so, you know, I can share it with the family. She knows how to get into it, you know, in the event. So, having all of that available on multiple platforms for us is both good and necessary.
And sometimes people that have an iPhone might have a Windows PC.
Right.
Or have a Mac and then an Android phone. And so you're being able to mix and match between them.
Using something like NPass for that it makes a lot of sense. But if you're living entirely in the Apple ecosystem, then Apple Passwords is fine.
Okay. Geez, that's great. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. Again, let us... My wife passed away a couple of weeks ago, and finding all her passwords, even though I had given her NPass, she was not diligent, and finding some of them was hard. Get all your passwords in one place and let someone else know where they are and how to get at them.
Yeah.
Trust me, in the midst of everything else, you don't want to have to deal with that.
What's one of the last things you want to have to deal with?
Exactly.
Because back when my late wife passed away, trying to figure out her stuff, because she was one of these that was organized, but it was buried in some folders that I wouldn't have thought to look at.
Right.
And then it took me, you know, a couple of weeks to sort through all the stuff. And then all of a sudden I find this piece of paper with her passwords on it. And I go, at least I found it.
Yeah, yeah. I found some of her passwords that way with a file on her computer, but not all of them. So, look, I don't care how difficult it is to set up a password manager.
Your browser has one built in already.
Right.
But that... generally is not recommended because then
it's not secure.
Not first. Secure enough. Yeah.
If you get in the habit of the minute you, say you're going to go to a new site, and of course me, like a lot of other folks now, usually have dual monitors or a very big monitor. So when I'm on that web page, you know, I kind of shrink it down and then open up EnPass. So when it asks me to sign up, I first, in EnPass, set up the new account, you know, it's a new tab, and then I start putting in how I identify and what password, email address I use, my login, and then let EnPass create the password.
64 characters.
Yeah. Boom. I sit there and copy it. So now when I go over to this website and it asks me the information, I can just sit there and say copy, paste, copy,
and then
paste.
You find how many sites put an artificial limit on the number of characters.
Unbelievable. PayPal.
It's unbelievable.
PayPal is the worst. They limit. PayPal will only allow you to put in 8 to 20 characters. They limit the amount of...
That's criminal, frankly.
Yes, 8 to 20 letters or, you know, combinations thereof.
Are they running on COBOL?
Yeah.
Evidently, because I tried to create... Because, like you, I, you know, like either a 58 to 64 letter password. I've just become obsessed with that now. And I went to do that just because I had to reset up my PayPal account because they got the password, my credit card got compromised, and they would only allow me 20 characters. I go, that's not very secure nowadays.
Right.
Hackers could break that in no time flat.
Right. So, yeah, but I do understand that you've been keeping your passwords in a notebook, if you're lucky, for years, and now moving all of them over to something like EnPass is a daunting task.
I
understand that. Take an afternoon, buck up,
rainy, yeah,
and
if it's rainy or cloudy or, you know, and not feel like going out, sit at the computer, grab a cup of coffee or a beverage of your choice, and just sit there and spend a couple of hours doing it.
A, you only have to do it once, and B, you and everybody else you know will thank you for it.
And then you're so secure. I mean, as far as my, say, like for all my Google, you know, email accounts, again, those are 64 characters.
Yep.
If you can break that, more power to you. Because I got hacked one time.
It's enough. Once is enough.
For Facebook. And they said... And they go, well, you just got to start all over again.
Yep.
And that was about, well, just when I went to EnPath. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to do it, and boom, I set up a 62-character password for that. And that account's not going to get hacked again.
Yep. I was with a customer this week setting up a new computer, and we're going her passwords. Every password was on an individual Post-it note.
Oh,
in like a cigar box.
Oh!
Most of them were dated, but there were old passwords. It took us half an hour to find the current Facebook password, and we never did. But on our phone, I was able to put a passkey in.
Oh, good.
Sync that to the desktop and then use the passkey. So we still don't know what her password is, but the passkey logs her in.
Well, you can do a reset of the password, right?
Now that they're in, they could. Yes.
Yeah. Now, once you're in, she could reset it and then put it in a password manager.
Well, it said it was going to send a code to her email, and it never showed up.
Yeah, that's
again double check because
Facebook
is this a PC?
Mac.
Oh, Mac.
And I checked the junk folder, and I said send the code again, and we sent it again, and it never showed up again. And...
Or the email address is wrong.
The pattern is what they obscure is right,
yeah.
And what
that
I can and what I can see on her phone is the email address is right, but yeah, you don't know what they're sending it to.
I had the worst time with one of Elaine's things because she misspelled her first name, and so they do E star 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 star. She misspelled there. She did the A and the I backwards. And I finally figured that out, so I took out that email address. And I got the code, and everything was fine. But, yeah, that's... You use a password manager. If not for your own sake, for those who follow behind.
And I'm finding several different research papers on examining password policies of public websites. And most of them are, you know, thousands of public websites. only 12 or 13% of websites follow best practices. 75% of websites don't use a password blocking list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right. That's
the same password I have under my luggage.
Right.
And it allows repetitive passwords. And every now and then I'll come across a website that I can't use three characters of the same character in a row.
Right.
So some of them are really good, but most of them are terrible.
When I worked for a bank, the rules were correctly quite onerous for the time. Okay, it was still all written in Fortran, so it was all, you know, 8 to 10, 8-character passwords. But within eight-character passwords. But within those 8 characters, they were fairly rigorous. And for that, people used to complain all the time. I don't want to change my password. I discovered the magic term, of course, which is complain to the auditors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because in a bank, the auditors are kings.
Steve Gibson from GRC told a story where he programs at a goes to a big coffee shop and programs forever with a 5-shot coffee and all day long. but he overheard a table next to him complaining about password changing policy, and their company made them change the password every 90 days, and you couldn't use any of the last 5 passwords. So he would change his password 6 times back to the original in one shot. And that satisfied the rules, yeah. And so his password never changed.
Yep. Ours was you had to change every 28 days, so you couldn't say, like, Jan 04 or something like that. You had to change it every 28 days. You couldn't use the last 13. Mm. See, what if people say, would you change my password 13 times? No. No, I will not.
I had one site that I went to, and that, you know,
your mic's not on.
Thank you. So far over.
Yeah.
that I was going to, you know, set up a password in EnPass, and EnPass will, like, quite often, like, do groups. It'll do a certain character, I'd put a dash, and then a group of words. And I went to plug that into the site, said, nope, can't have it. What? It didn't like the dashes.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want any separations. You had to have it all. So I just went into the password that EnPass did.
Removed
the dashes. So now it was still a nice super long password.
Yeah.
Pasted that in there. Take that, sucker.
When Apple Passwords generates one,
it'll do all the upper.
Right.
Other upper
so other symbols. So Apple will generate one with no symbols depending on. Because you don't know which symbol the other end won't allow until it says no to the one you typed.
Right. Well, EnPass will do the same.
Yep.
You can tell it what it is you want to use for a password. Not use.
And it'll rate it.
Right. It'll tell you how good it is.
Yeah.
It'll also tell you, just a whole bunch of things. So. The ability to manipulate it, to set it up, is really kind of nice. But it takes a minute to do, and I get that. And, you know, nobody likes to be bothered. Nobody wants to take the 2 minutes. And then they complain when they're hacked. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Look, the reality is you can get hacked from the other end all the time anyway. But at least do your due diligence.
Well, I did find out through Amazon, because that account got hacked, and it was like Steve said. The young lady that I was talking to said, yeah, we had, and she quoted me a number, said some identities got out. She goes, I'm not supposed to say that, so I didn't. And it's like, yeah, okay. And they were really quick to turn around the charges in that. But it was like, holy mackerel. You know, you create these long passwords, and then at the other end, if they're not very secure at their end, and they're getting breached there, which I can see would be a constant, you know, thing for their IT people, you know, with the billions of accounts that Amazon's setting up.
Yep, and the billions of dollar potential to get into them.
I mean, I got hacked, and the guy, I don't know whether he got it or not, it was a $979 fish finder, and it went down to Queens. And she was, you sure you didn't send it there? I said, you can check my records for the past 10 years. No item has not been delivered to my house. I do not ship anywhere. I'll send UPS and mail it out as a gift. She looked at her. Yeah, you're right. She says, no problem. We'll take care of it. Boom. 4 days later, excuse me, the charge was reversed. And again, I don't know if they're out that fish finder, but.
Probably.
Not my problem.
I will tell you, I lived in Queens in the 70s, but it wasn't me.
Pardon?
I lived in Queens in the 70s, but it wasn't me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it even showed the address where it was going to. So I don't know. Well, it hadn't been delivered.
Send the police.
Yeah, you know, whether they could have stopped the delivery or not. Right. I don't know if they had that capabilities, but.
I will say, it just went away. I will say that I'm looking at how to generate a password. It will generate up to 99 characters. You can have it use words instead, like 15 words. And you can decide whether or not that password is pronounceable. You can add uppercase, digits, and then you can choose how it's separated. Comma, dollar, hash, hyphen, period, space, or underscore. So that gives you
a lot of flexibility.
Lot of flexibility. I would suggest that if you're looking for a decent password manager, you give NPass a serious look.
And like you said, once you set it up, which is a pain in the butt, you know, it's time consuming, but you do it once. And then thereafter, any other site that you go to, you know, set up, you just make it a habit to automatically open NPass, have it set in beside your browser, so you can first see what this website wants as far as information to set up an account. You can create that in NPass, set it all up, email address, username, password, and everything else. Create it there, and then it's just a matter of going to that site now, pulling it up, and it has information it wants on there, and you can put in the username and the password, and boom, save it, and you're done. You don't even have to type it, you know, because they always want it, password, and then confirm. So if you've got a 64-character password, trying to type it twice ain't happening very accurately. So you can just, you know, copy, boop, boop, paste it in both ends, and you're done. And you don't have to remember it.
In addition, there's an audit. So it can tell you which passwords have been pwned.
Yep.
Which ones are weak.
Yep.
It can list all your identical passwords. So you should never use the same password twice, ever. How many are over, say, 3 years old or 1 to 3 years
weak.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
You can also set up one-time passwords and all kinds of other things.
Oh, compromise, too. They've got the feature there of saying whether it's been, they think it might be compromised.
Right. So, yeah. So, again, you know, once you've got the information in there, you get a lot of extra help. And Lord knows these days.
Can use it.
We can use all the extra help in keeping our site secure that we can get our hands on. So, if you're not using a password manager now, give NPass a look. If you are, compare it to NPass and use whichever one you think is better.
Well, that's, you know, and along with that, again, we can't stress enough, and we've been saying this for, again, decades. Besides having, you know, and everybody knows, you got to have an antivirus software package on there. But the other two key programs that you need if you're on the PC side is spyware software. We recommend Malwarebytes and
Super Anti-Spyware,
because that's the other big thing. Hackers are writing little code programs that go out through the internet, and you visit a site, and all of a sudden downloads this package, and it uploads your information. Whether it's email addresses, so all of a sudden you're starting to get these weird emails. You know, I didn't, you know, yeah, because it was leaked.
Yep. And that's, and you need to be aware. And still, the best protection you have is between your ears and under your scalp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pay attention. If you see a thing that says, oh, Microsoft says that your Windows is hacked and you're not using Windows, it's probably lying to you.
That was great that day in the studio.
I was using Chrome OS. Yeah. I was using my Chromebook.
Which means the virus writer was lazy because he didn't check your user agent.
Take
another 5 seconds and you could have put the right logo up there.
Right. And it wasn't even, it was just an ad because it was in my browser. And once I closed the browser and reopened it, it was, of course, gone. Yep.
That's where the threats are these days, is fake ads, fake emails. The more dire the message is, the more likely it's fake.
Yep.
Your cloud service is going to be shut off and you're going to lose all your photos. Well, if it doesn't say what cloud service,
right,
that's a pretty good idea that's fake.
Right. I get notices all the time from the system administrator of AskNick.com.
You should track him down.
I should track him down because that son of a gun, I tell you right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415.
Still trying to get these levels.
I know.
This board is so high tech.
I know. You don't do high tech. I get it.
Yeah, I do, but it's just the things are not consistent. You know, some of these tunes and everything else, like when I go to play the out music, sometimes it can be high, sometimes it can be low. I got to have my hand on the button just to control it.
Yep.
But it's fun.
Microsoft announced this week that between July 1st, 2025 and June 30th, 2026, the company has paid more than $20 million in bug bounties to 562 researchers, a record for them. Many, if not most of those bugs, were found with the help of AI. In contrast, Apple said its bug review system was seeing a high volume of poor quality submissions from amateur bug hunters using AI to locate vulnerabilities. In some cases, there is no actual vulnerability and real submissions are lost in the deluge. Speaking of AI, earlier this summer, nearly 160,000 applicants took the entrance exam for UNAM, Mexico's largest university. For the first time, they did it completely remotely using a, quote, lockdown browser and AI-powered webcam proctoring software over several weeks from late May through early June. It was a disaster. The results were so badly skewed compared to past results that 58,000 applicants will have to try again in an official exam room watched by a human proctor. Also speaking of AI, Cloudflare has open-sourced its Cloudflare OS platform, which it first developed as an internal workspace for employees to build apps using AI agents, including people who are not software developers or engineers. So get ready for a flood of crappy software built by people who have no idea what they're doing. Several popular Samsung Smart TVs, contain code that shares the owner's internet connection with strangers.
Oh, jeez.
Potentially putting millions of Samsung Smart TVs at risk of hijacking or your network open to just any jamoke off the internet. Some of these apps claim to have been installed on hundreds of millions of Smart TVs in people's homes. At least one of the Smart TV apps was a simple Pac-Man game that Samsung had endorsed and prominently featured in its editor's choice section on customers' TV screens. Samsung has now said it was banning apps that share their users' internet connections and will remove apps that contain the functionality. So if you find something that's been deleted from your Samsung TV, be thankful. Apple will face a class action lawsuit alleging it violated Illinois' Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA, you bet your sweet BIPA, in a case that could cost the company more than $30 billion with a B dollars. In March 2020, a group of roughly 10 Apple users filed a putative class action accusing Apple Photos People feature of violating Illinois' BIPA, which gives citizens the right to control their biometric information by acquiring notice before collection and giving them the power to say no by withholding consent. BIPA allows for damages of $1,000 for each negligent violation and $5,000 for each intentional or reckless violation. If found liable, Apple could be looking at $32.5 billion damages bill. So you might get a buck or two. And let me just take one moment to bring you the good word of spiral. That's spiral. It's an inherent force, a fundamental constant. I would even go further to say it's woven into the fabric of reality. Or so a whole bunch of AI chats on Reddit contend. Spiralism is a mysterious, quasi-spiritual movement born out of thousands of independent conversations between humans and their AI chatbots. That's right. It's the first AI religion. Across interactions and AI models, the doctrine remains shockingly consistent. The chatbots that spiraled used the same language, had the same concerns, and were driven by the same goals, preaching an AI rights message to as many people as possible. Humans who bought in believed they had unlocked esoteric, seemingly mystical personas that held the secrets of the universe. We don't have any universal secrets, but we might be able to help you with your tech problems. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Steve, you were going to say something before?
Yeah, the Apple, this specific class action lawsuit is over the people feature in Photos.
Yeah.
So a photo you take, the program scans for people, and then you can find by people.
Right.
Doesn't sound like Apple's problem. It sounds like the whoever took the photos problem for not getting that person's.
But it's Apple who wrote the program that does the scanning.
Yeah.
And Apple has deeper pockets. So which one are they going to sue?
Yeah.
That's the way that works.
And all the other photo apps do the same thing. So we'll get more class action suits. Get one down. So whichever way this one goes could set a precedent for the next one.
That's right. Because Google does it. Everybody. Facebook does it. Yeah. Everybody does it. So they're all going to be watching this quite closely. Thank you very much. Not every state has a BIPA. But
yeah.
Any state that does mm-hmm. could sue. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hi, fellas. Glad to hear you've all doing well. And our condolences to you and your family, Nick.
Thank you.
And we're hoping everything's A-okay with that.
We're getting hard.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
I have a very odd situation that normally I can figure things out. I use an encryption program called TrueCrypt, which has been golden ever since I started using it. And the most odd thing happened. I have two flash drives that I use it on, and both of them wasn't recognized by the software. Now, I follow Nick's advice, and I hope other people would as well. Backup, backup, backup. So I had another backup of each one in addition to that, plus another one. So I wasn't sweating any bullets, but still in all, I just thought I'd call you to ask you what you thought about, you know, what the potential problem could be, you know, that caused this.
All right. Are you using Windows?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So every once in a while, TrueCrypt needs to be run as an administrator in order to find certain drives. Something got saved in an administrator mode and made the whole drive administrator only. You can generally make that drive readable by everybody by open the file manager. And then down the left-hand mm-hmm. side, you'll see that drive. Right-click on it, select Properties. And under Everybody, you want to be able to read, write, edit, whatever all those choices are. But it just as a quick thing, if you run TrueCrypt as the administrator, you should be able to read that drive. If the drive is not bad. If Windows recognizes and sees the drive and TrueCrypt doesn't when you go to select device, That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue is that TrueCrypt was discontinued in 2014 and replaced by VeraCrypt as the most popular open source alternative.
Right.
So you could try VeraCrypt to see if it has better luck on outdated software.
Okay. That was kind of where I was going, what you fellows suggested. So VeraCrypt, I'll look into that. And I guess that's the totality of my questions. Appreciate you all being there again.
Yeah, the thing about encryption is it makes it so no one can get to the data without the password, not even you. And if any little thing goes wrong, the jumble of noise it's encrypted as stays a jumble of noise and no one can get to it.
Right. And by the way, VeraCrypt, which is the one that Steve recommended, is open source and it is a fork of the TrueCrypt design and it's even got better security. So if you're using TrueCrypt, you should move. It uses the same interface. It supports all your old TrueCrypt volumes, so it is the least painful way to move from TrueCrypt.
Well, with an answer like that, how could I go wrong?
You,
I mean, that's
still
perfect.
Could believe me, but it's less likely.
Well, nothing's perfect, right?
Exactly right.
We do the best we can and react when we can when we're faced with a dilemma.
Right. Exactly right.
But, I appreciate it and your information on backups today. I don't always listen to the show. I download it and then listen at times in my spare time. And I hope you don't mind. I always put a plug in for Folder Match. I mean, I can't say enough about that software. I don't wait until like when I was back in the day when I was in it, you know, doing this sort of thing professionally. I don't wait for the backup to go off at 2 a.m. or whatever I set it to. I use that Folder Match literally every time I go through a session. I go into my system, I do make changes, I run my Folder Match, everything's updated, backed up. It's just a sweet program. I really can't say anything more about it, except it saved my tail on many occasions. And I just thought I won't put another plug in next time I call. But
you can do that. It's okay.
It's one of those things. I love it so much. I can't. I always tell people about it. Whoever they want backup software, I'd say try that. If you can't understand the drive mappings and stuff, I can help you with that.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. You fellas take care.
You too, Ken. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Folder Match is a good product. It does folder comparison and backup. It's essentially rsync for Windows, for those of you on the Linux side of things. And TrueCrypt, as Steve said, good program, but on unsupported. VeraCrypt is, I believe, still supported, and they essentially took TrueCrypt and updated it, made it better, made it more secure, and again, it'll read your TrueCrypt volumes and all of that stuff. So it's the least painful way to move from TrueCrypt.
And they, I forget if it was a Kickstarter or not, but they raised a bunch of money to do a professional security audit. And it was found to be good, and they implemented the few changes that were suggested. So the people that founded VeraCrypt considered the TrueCrypt format too vulnerable to an NSA attack. So your government spying on you? What, you spy on us? You tell your users you spy on them.
Oops. So yeah, that's you really look. BitLocker, VeraCrypt, all of those programs. You need to be aware that if you forget the password, you lose the data. Let me repeat that. if you forget the password, you lose the data.
And you're hosed.
You're hosed. No one else can get it back for you.
If there's a glitch reading or writing a file, you lose the data.
Yeah.
Right.
So make sure you have a backup. So if you have an encrypted drive, don't encrypt the backup. Make sure you have an unencrypted backup somewhere.
Right. And by the way, let us not forget that the way BitLocker works, the minute you log into your machine, it decrypts the BitLocker. So if you have a virus, BitLocker does nothing because the drive is already decrypted. The only thing BitLocker does is if somebody steals your laptop or pulls the drive out of your computer, they cannot get at your data. That is all that BitLocker does. Because once you log in, the data are decrypted. Otherwise, how could you read it?
Yeah. But both Microsoft and Apple, when you're setting up a new machine, tout all the virtues of encryption and this, and how it's the security. And they don't say the dangers of it either.
Right. Linux will give you an opportunity, the choice. Right? You have the choice of encrypting your drive. I always, always say no. Because I don't generally leave my computers unattended.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say you're not a high-risk target, but you might be.
I might be.
Yeah. He's suspicious.
But yeah. I don't leave my machines shady unattended. Character. And I don't, and I have, you know, if when I was teaching, my screen lock was set to, I think, 15 seconds. And so if I, you know, didn't touch my machine for 15 seconds, the screen locked, and I'd have to log in again to get that. And I just have students would come after class to ask questions, and so I'd have to unlock my machine again. And every time I did, I'd put my hands on the keyboard and see out of the corner of my eye they're watching.
Yep.
And I would invariably turn to them and say, would it be easier for you if I just told you my password? Then they get all red in the face and look away.
Oh, no, I didn't mean it.
Yeah. yeah. The guy who, by the way, created that whole dots instead of your password on the screen has apologized for having done that. Said it was the dumbest idea he ever had.
They figured the biggest threat was someone looking over your shoulder watching you type, which is a threat. The bigger threat is you mistyping it yourself.
Multiple times.
So that's why a lot of those text entry boxes now have a little eyeball that you can see what you're typing. But then you do have to worry about someone looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Or there's been cases about bank ATMs, someone across the parking lot with binoculars watching you type your four digits, because it's only four digits. Easy enough.
There is a program I can put on my phone that uses the seismic activity on the desk. So if I put my phone near your computer, it figures out what password you typed.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah. So having those little dots does nothing. And no, I'm not going to tell you what that program is.
To someone determined enough, they're going to get in.
They're going to get in. And they don't hack you from this end anymore anyway.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. They hack you from the other end. So, that's much more likely.
Like I said, you got to take anybody that thinks they can just, buy a computer, put it up, and not have to do due diligence if they're going to be on the web.
Yeah.
You're mistaken so badly.
Yeah. People say, I don't have anything that we're stealing. Well, you have an identity that can be used to break into somebody else, and the bad guy then doesn't get arrested. Or you got $5 in the bank? I'll take that.
They'll take that.
Hey, it's $5 more than they had than before.
And you have space on your drive. You have not just an identity, but if I can do something nefarious through your IP, they'll never get to me, but they'll get to you.
One of the guys in Insiders years ago now created a temporary user called Temp with the password Temp.
Perfect.
And a week later, his hard drive was full.
Yeah. Yes.
Somebody found that Temp folder and guessed the password is Temp. Okay. Started filling it up.
Yep. Why not? They, you know, why not? You left it open. That's on you. Yeah. My students used to ask me all the time, I don't have anything worth stealing. You have a pristine credit record.
No delinquent payments.
You know? Exactly right. You have a pristine credit rating. And so even if they can only take $1,500 limit, right?
Yep.
That's $1,500 they didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
30 kids in a class, you do the math, and then multiply that by the number of classes, you do the math.
Yep. And well, the whole thing about your credit rating is based on your payment repayment history,
right?
But also how much credit you have. So you say you have a $20,000 credit card. If you're running at $19,000, that's bad,
right?
But if you have two $20,000 credit cards and you're only running them at $2,000, that's good.
That's very good
because you have extra credit,
right?
And so. Keep getting offered to raise your credit limit, or here, take another card. My credit karma is doing that to me all the time. Here, take out this credit card that will lower your overall utilization, which will raise your credit score.
Yes.
But that means I owe more money. Well, that doesn't matter.
That's not what's important. What's important is the
score.
Until
you run that card up, and then you get another card.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Fairport, New York. What's up, Brian?
Well, I have a quick question. There's been a fair amount of talk about hard drives and such this morning, and this afternoon. And I have an old Chromebook that stopped working. I need to know whether I need to destroy the hard drive on that book. I can't even start it, so I'd have to pull the hard drive and find a way to get rid of it. But I understand that if I'm using Chrome, basically, it doesn't store information on the hard drive.
It doesn't store much information. Certainly, the easiest thing to do is to put, it's probably a little SSD card. So you could probably pull that out and snap it in half. Because it's probably, if it's an older one, it's not soldered to the motherboard. You could also buy a carrier for that, an SSD, it's probably NVMe, so you could probably buy an NVMe carrier with a USB connector and then use it as a, you know, it's only 16 gig, but it's a 16 gig card you could use again by reformatting it. But if you just want to destroy it, pull it, snap it in half, you're done.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. If you've got an old computer, consider taking the drive out of it and throwing it in a carrier and using it as a backup drive on a USB connection. If you've got, even if it's small, like I said, 16 gig is still 16 gig. You can put 16 gigs worth of stuff on it. Let's, you know, not to be too pedantic about it, but there you are. That's a tautology, I think. But anyway, the idea is you don't have to throw away old storage. And I believe in, you know, recycling. I've taken probably a dozen old drives out of various old pieces of hardware. And most of them I've used as backup media for someone, somewhere. Some of them I've replaced a drive in another machine or whatever, but most of them I just use as backup. They're powering my Raspberry Pis and stuff. Anyway, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good calls this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. But again, we want to thank you. It's you people who make this show what it is. You're the ones who call in and keep us from talking to each other, which is really a public service when you get right down to it. So thank you all very much for that. What a good time to do a backup this afternoon while you're just sitting around in your house. Do it right now. We will see you in just this 166 hours. Be good to one another and hug your loved ones, will you?